Tell us about your ring.
The ring, this ring that I wear is to honor my friend Shootsie Reynolds that was a Wasp. She was a jewelry maker. She was very talented.
That's a B-25. Sounds beautiful, doesn't it?
Oh, I love it. So Shootsie made the jewelry inside her shop that was located behind her house, and many of the Wasp family would like to get these rings, and so she was making them. There's another fella now that sells these rings in Ohio and just carrying on the Wasp legacy. Shootsie also made earrings and made wristbands with the Wasp wings. This is actually a Wasp wing. If you look real close, it's the ring that's the Wasp wings. It's hard to say, Wasp wing ring. But yeah, anyhow, there was a recruiting poster with Carolyn Jensen. She's a Thunderbird pilot for the Air Force. And if you look close, you'll see she's wearing a bracelet with the Wasp wings that was made by Shootsie. So it just makes you proud to be part of this and to see what they've done and where their legacy has led.
Well, Lisa, over the years, I guess they had reunions over the years, right? Now, of course, they're all pretty much all gone now. Do they have these reunions? They ever have any reunions?
So we have had reunions at the museum for the last 20 years. And to my understanding, I know that they are in contact with each other. I'm looking at John because I know he's part of that group. But we do our best to host the families every year at the museum and give them a chance to see each other and catch up, basically. But, okay. Yeah.
Right. So it's still... still carrying on, so.
It does, yes.
And I could answer that, too. We're called COWS, Kids of Wasp. And we do, in the past, we escorted our mothers to these reunions. Well, now they're not coming to the reunions, and hopefully we'll get a large group of these Kids of Wasp next year to come to the Wasp Homecoming.
That'll be great, yeah. And I'm sure your granddaughter will be there.
Oh, she will. She actually came to the Wasp Homecoming a month ago. This is my niece, too.
What's your niece? Okay.
Her niece is Katie Marsh. Katie Marsh is now an airline pilot, and she came to the museum as a reenactor. She flew in an AT-6 with the Wasp uniform, and as she got out, little kids were coming up and asking her for autographs. So it just makes you glad to see this being paid forward and the younger generation running with this.
Malcolm, we're talking about airplanes now. Let's tell me a little bit. Well, we'll start off with the Stearman because that's what they flew first, and then they went into the UC-78. Tell me about the Stearman. Well, we were intended to have a Stearman here that actually flew Wasps, but unfortunately it had some mechanical malfunction. We were not able to. So this is just a generic.
Generic.
Yeah.
Anyway, I have the honor of being one of the pilots for the Wasp Museum. And the Wasp would start in the Stearman. And the Stearman is not really forgiving of crosswinds with a beginning pilot. So they had two auxiliary fields that they would fly where they could take off and land into the wind. And they would be trucked out there. And then they would wait their turn to go fly the Stearmans. Okay? The Stearman has a 220 Continental engine and is not particularly fond of either crosswinds or taking off on hot days. And so they would wait out there with two porta potties and wait their turn to start flying in the Stearmans. When they were done and moved out of the Stearmans, they would move into BT-13s. The museum does have a flying BT-13. And they would move over to Avenger Field permanently, flying off of the pavement, move into a T-6, and then move into the UC-78s. This is where they did all of their multi-engine training. They had about 40 of them on the field at the time.
So was the Stearman, was that the first airplane they flew?
Early they started in PT-19 Fairchilds, but then they moved almost exclusively to Stearmans, yes.
The Stearman, which is a big airplane for somebody with little time.
I've flown with a 5'2" young lady in the front seat, and we had to have two pads to get her to see over the windscreen.
Well, talk a little bit about the visibility when you're landing and that sort of stuff.
Well, you really can't see anything over the nose. Depending on where you're sitting, the visibility on the front is restricted, from the back seat even more so. You use your peripheral vision completely. Once you've lined yourself up on the runway, you've had your nose down. Then as you flare, it's all peripheral vision trying to keep the airplane straight.
Yeah, I just figured all the visitors...
How about the quirks on the airplane? Any quirks?
The Stearman's a very good airplane as a trainer, as long as you're not trying to use crosswinds. It is very unforgiving in any sort of gusty crosswind. And that's West Texas, tends to be windy and have crosswinds, which is hence why they used a square mile for their initial training.
Right. Okay, how about the UC-78 here? First of all, why do they call it the bamboo bomber?
It has a wooden one-piece wing. So the wooden spar goes entirely through the wing, all the way to the wingtips. You remove the fuselage, it's all one piece. Made up of spruce, not no bamboo in it. And the structure is wooden ribs, wooden trailing spar, wooden leading spar. The only metal parts on the wing itself are the nacelles, engines, and the attachments.
Now, how different is this from the civilian version that Cessna had before this?
The T-50 and the AT-17 or UC-78 are all almost identical.
All the same?
Yes, sir. They all had the Jacobs 755-9 engines, 245 horsepower aside, with non-feathering propellers.
Now, how much time did they get in this and also in UC-78?
Typically, it was 60 hours in the Stearman, 60 to 80 into the BT-13s, same in the T-6s, and the same into the UC-78 over a nine-week period.
So how long did it take the program from the start till they got their WASP wings?
It took 6 to 7 months, depending on the weather.
That's pretty quick.
Yeah, to make sure they got their flying hours. Yeah, yeah, it really
that's
was.
A lot of, to get that much time in 6 months, that's pretty tough. Yeah.
Yeah, they were flying sun up, you know, constantly, sun up to sun down.
They went through the same training that the men did, other than combat.
Right. Okay. Now, total, how many were trained from the start to the end? Do you know?
25,000 women applied, 1,830 were accepted, and 1,074 graduated. And 38 of the WASP actually lost their life.
That was my next question.
Yes, unfortunately.
Yeah. And actually, if you add the original WAFs that became part of the WASP program, that would be 1,108 when you add back those originals. But yeah.
Is it kind of like a twin beach as far as landing?
No.
Is it easier?
Yes, it is. I've flown twin beach, and this airplane, a twin beach, you typically want a three-wheel land it because of the twin tails get caught up in the prop bar. This one 3 points wonderfully. Do it routinely. And I got in trouble the other day. I was practicing 3 point full flap landings, and on my airfield where I was practicing is the Fat Tire Cowboys, who do short field landings and stuff. Mm-hmm. And they came over and asked me if I'd compete against the Super Cub because I was landing it and stopping it at 600 feet, making some of those guys look bad.
Well, that sounds like you're bragging on yourself.
No, I'm not. I was just trying to see how short I could land it. And they were trying to teach some of these guys how to do short field landings. And they're going, look, that stupid twin over there is doing a better job.
Yeah, okay. We got time here for a few questions. If we get somebody out here with the mics, you got questions? Matt?
On the UC-78, what's the single engine performance or issues?
Horrible. The props do not feather. Okay? Single engine speed is 90 miles an hour, and it will not maintain altitude above a density altitude of 5,100 feet on a single engine if you're at or near gross. So I think this is the airplane that they said the other engine takes you to the point of impact.
Who was next? Sir? Excuse me.
Yeah, once the pilots graduated from primary flight training, how was it decided that what they did for advanced flight training, you know, where they went, and did they typically stay with that airplane for those 2 years?
Okay, so if I understand of course, you're asking how it was decided where they would go. And then are you asking if they had a primary airplane?
No, where did they, how did they determine what airplane they would fly and where they went?
Right.
Okay.
Right. So I don't know how it was determined which Air Force or which base they would be based out of. They did not have a primary plane. They flew everything that was thrown at them, basically. Because, I mean, one day they could be, you know, in a trainer. The next day they could be in a bomber. I mean, it's just whatever needed to be buried. Or they did test flights as well. And so they had to just be well-versed to handle anything that was thrown at them. So they would often read the manual.
So they didn't get
John,
no training?
Was your mom?
My mother was in Asheville in the Carolinas. And she flew the UC-78, the bamboo bomber. She did a lot of transportation of personnel to the Pentagon and back. So that was where she was stationed. But to try to answer your question, I don't think the WASP got to pick at all. They were assigned, you will go here and you will go here.
How about as far as training, though, getting type rated or training or type rated on the on
Can
that
you hear me?
You know, like on a B-17 versus P-51 or whatever.
Well, I didn't get the beginning of your question. We had a good friend that was a WASP, and she flew P-51s, and she had to put on weight to get in the WASP. The minimum weight was 100 pounds. I don't think she ever weighed 100 pounds to see this little wisp of a woman flying this P-51, and just, I think she said she had to sit on two parachutes just to see over the cockpit, and it just, so I don't know how they picked. You know, you'd think you'd want somebody maybe that could reach the controls. They talked about having to reach, and how do you do this?